Hey, Dylan Kelly here, host of the Wave Break podcast. Excited to get into this episode, but first, here's a quick word from our sponsor. This episode of the Wave Break podcast is brought to you by Klaviyo, the growth marketing platform most recommended by other business leaders. Listen, in uncertain times, you need to be supporting your community and growing relationships with your customers. It's going to be appreciated. It's going to be remembered. It's going to be shared. And in good times and bad, this type of communication that's open and empathetic with your customers is key. This is a key theme that we've been talking about at Wavebreak. I've been preaching this on the podcast. And when you're communicating with your customers in this way, the best way to do this is with email. It is and always will be one of the best channels for delivering communication like this. And what I love about Klaviyo is that email is one of its core offerings. And their personalization that you can do inside Klaviyo is just, it can't be beat. And when you leverage that personalization driven by a 360-degree view of the customer, these emails are going to feel more relevant and they're going to drive even stronger relationships. And Klaviyo gets it. They're not just, you know, some company. They understand how challenging it is right now for every entrepreneur. You know, it was hard to get your business off the ground, and navigating these times is even harder. And if you're feeling overwhelmed with growing your business, know that you're not alone. Klaviyo is here to help you build relationships across any distance for your brand and create memorable and meaningful email marketing moments that last a lifetime. And that's how you build a successful e-commerce brand. And this is why I love Klaviyo so much, because they're on the same page with me and Wavebreak. Is like, we're not just about making more revenue. That's great. But what this is really about is an opportunity to create an amazing community with your customers. And the best way to do it is with email. And if you're not on Klaviyo, you gotta get on Klaviyo. Visit klaviyo.com to schedule a free trial. That's KLAVIYO.com. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Wave Break podcast, the marketing podcast for high growth consumer brands, where you learn what's working in marketing with interviews from the fastest growing direct to consumer, e-commerce, and retail brands. Really excited for today's episode. If you're new here, I'm Dylan Kelly, founder and CEO at Wavebreak. We're an email and CRM agency focused on lifecycle and retention marketing for direct consumer and e-commerce brands. We have a comprehensive data set that we've built over the last 5+ years of running this agency, working with some of the fastest growing brands and really figuring out what best-in-class email and SMS marketing looks like. And in times like this, it's getting more difficult, more expensive to acquire customers. If you're not dialed in with email and SMS and you're not best in class there, you need to be. And if you need help getting there because you don't have the resources in-house or the strategy in-house to get there, and you want a proven team to come in and drive results within the next 90 days, you can learn more about partnering with us at wavebreak.com. Today on the show, I'm really excited. I'm joined by Nate Bigger, founder of Monpure London. Really excited to have Nate on the show today. He's building a brand new luxury brand. I shouldn't say brand new, launched in 2020, but an up and coming luxury brand focused on hair care. And I'll let Nate do more of the talking about it, but really exciting brand. He has a really unique background working in building some of the most well-known brands in the world as executive assistant to the main person who ran those. And I'll let Nate get into that story in a second, but for now, let's jump right in. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, I'm super excited to dive into brand building and long-term growth and a lot of, I don't want to call them like off the beaten path topics, but you know, just something that hasn't been that common over the last 5 or 10 years or so of like this D2C wave. But yeah, I'm excited to dive into that. Before we do that, yeah, give us the quick overview on Monpure and yeah, we can go from there.
Sure. So Monpure London is a multi-award-winning scalp and hair health brand. So we deal with all kinds of issues relating to scalp and hair, let's say redness, itchiness, psoriasis, but we also help with solutions for hair thinning and hair loss. We try to do it in a very luxurious way, as we actually don't want people to feel like they have a problem when they purchase a product. And one other thing to notice is maybe that we focus mainly on women, and are trying to accompany women's scalp and hair health concerns through key moments in their life. So in particular, when you see any hormonal changes after giving birth, but also you're looking at perimenopause and menopause. And we felt like there was a lack of solutions out there.
Yeah, for sure. No, a super exciting space. And then, yeah, how did you get into this? Because yeah, it's a unique brand. How did you get into the space of hair and scalp care?
Yeah, it's a bit of a long-winded story, but I guess we have a bit of time. So I guess I can give you a bit of background on myself and how I got there. But firstly, I have to apologize in advance for a thick German accent, which you probably didn't have on the podcast before. So, you know, bear with me if you don't understand me. But yeah, so my original background is actually in Chinese studies and economics. So I've lived in China. I've studied there. I've worked there for a while. And when I finished my uni, I was really lucky to be discovered by a company in the UK where I became the executive assistant to a CEO of one of the biggest and most successful brand building houses in the world in the sports fashion outdoor industry. And because I was the right hand, I basically sat between the CEOs of some major brands, including Speedo and other sports fashion brands, you know, LS, Kangaroos, Canterbury of New Zealand, Berghaus. And I needed to collate the information and brief and debrief the CEO of the company and represent him all over the world. So it's been quite a wild start into the career of brand building and brand management, but it really enabled me to learn about building brands for the long term and also understand what makes people love brands for the long term and not just for the short term. But also I've learned a lot about family business and family culture, just being part of that wonderful family business called Pentland Brands. Yeah,
for sure. What and like, I know you kind of touched on this already, like the biggest takeaways, but yeah, what was different about how they operated the ad and like what you learned from that?
Yeah, great question. I think the first thing that I would say is they would have only brought brands into their portfolio when they have a very niche story. So it's funny because when you speak to some venture capitalists out there, they ask you, is your brand, you know, is that mass enough to make a lot of money? But actually any great brand in the world started with a niche and a focus and then opened up, you know, their product range. Any brand you can think of, in the case of Speedo, it's the best swimming brand in the world. In case of Nike, it was the best running brand in the world, et cetera, right? So, so I think starting with a niche and then step by step opening up your product range, but still being known for your niche, even in the future, is a very powerful concept of building brands. So what comes with that is that you don't just look at next season sales. You need to look at brand equity stories that are going beyond the next season. You have to think for the long term. When I am building Montpure London, I'm trying to build something like a Chanel. You can call it hubris, but I'm thinking very, very long term. I'm trying to build a big company that has strong values and that helps people all around the world. And I also try to build a global company. We're already selling into 37 countries now. Obviously not huge numbers as a Chanel, but you know, I'm just trying to illustrate that it's really important to think about your brand and not just about sales. I think in today's world, most brands launch mainly digital only and mainly trying to get a lot of traction very fast to get more funding and scale even faster. And then there's usually a company buying that brand to show growth, but it's not growth through achieving the growth yourself, but a lot of companies buy it to show growth through acquisition, right? It's a short-term concept. A lot of those brands are disappearing after 4 or 5 years in the market, but they served a purpose for the time.
We're even seeing this right now. I saw yesterday, I think Coca-Cola is shutting down Honest Tea, which is like a huge tea brand. To Coke, they're like, yeah, it's nothing. And I don't know if it's like official yet or what, but I did see that. And it's just crazy because like you said, like you work so hard on like building this brand and then it gets acquired And then it's like, you think it's a big deal. And then these companies just like chop it off. Like, and it is the holding company strategy. It's like, what can we buy to show growth? Yeah, interesting. Anyway, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I literally saw that yesterday. And I'm like, that is a perfect example.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It happens left, right, and center, actually, without us noticing it much. Also in the beauty space, there's a few big conglomerates. Sometimes brands are being bought to make them disappear, I think.
Yeah.
Also a strategy. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, how do you think about that as like, a younger brand? When did Montpure London launch exactly? Just for context for our listeners.
Well, we launched a company in May 2020, which was a challenging time to say the least. You know, it was pandemic. I didn't plan for the pandemic. I've been working for a year and a half before that on the brand. And I would say if I hadn't collected some major experience previously in various fields, it would probably been even harder to navigate those challenges and survive. I think the challenge for us was that we're a premium, a luxury brand. And as a luxury brand, you usually grow omnichannel and you grow with a retailer that helps you raise awareness. Obviously, the last 2 years of pandemic, there was no retail. Right. So we had to compete digitally with everyone who became digital with very little budgets. But what I noticed is that we're so focused on education around scalp and hair health that that this very personalized approach helped us a lot with extremely high retention rates. And even if we're looking into our average order value, it's a lot higher than many of the retailers I've worked for or where I know the numbers from. So we're looking, I mean, I'm happy to share that. We're looking at about, in the UK, at an average order value of £110. And in the US, we're looking at an average order value of $170. So this is really, really big. So, you know, in reality, we managed to build a model where we are profitable on first order. But it doesn't scale as fast as a cheap product that has a pure growth strategy on like 15, 20 quid. So it's a much more educational long-term product that we're trying to explain the customer to how to look after their scalp and hair health.
Yeah. It's a lot different from like, you know, a quick TikTok run up, like, you know, XYZ skincare, hair care product. That's just like a cash grab.
And we're also always navigating the space between luxury and science. So, we're using ingredients that if you had psoriasis, let's say, and you go to your dermatologist, your dermatologist might be recommending a salicylic acid solution, but it's a prescription one. So you cannot just get it over the counter. But we use the same ingredients. We just don't include them at a high, like harsh amount. We make a kinder solution to the prescription one. So you still get the same active effects. And then we work them with our biochemists and doctors into a hair care formula that works really well. But what it means is that the messaging is a very carefully thought through messaging, right? Because you can't make medical claims, but at the same time, you kind of want to tell your customer what it can do for you. So it's navigating that beyond just saying, oh, your hair will look so much better, right? Because this is the traditional way. It's just talking about how something looks. But we're really trying to change, let's say, the dermatological condition of the scalp for someone. Because what we notice is that a healthy dermatological condition of the scalp is what impacts the natural growth and retention of hair. Right? And the science of the last 5 to 10 years all shows the same. So this is where we're coming from. But yeah, navigating that field online is also a challenge. So whenever you say something like hair loss, it's very hard to even get an ad life through Facebook.
Yeah. And like, and maybe I'm wrong in this assumption, but like, or at least this is personal for me. Like, I feel like the hardest part of being a luxury premium brand is like saying no to things. Like, for example, you know, like not discounting or like, you know, choosing retailer specifically. Like in my mind, it's like, you know, oh, I gotta have it all, right? I gotta, you know, kind of more like the TikTok brand in a way. right? Yeah. It's like same as the direct-to-consumer brand, right? They want to like grow so fast and just get there, right? Just be at 100 million in revenue tomorrow. How do you be patient in like this digital world where like everything is so fast? And I know you think, you still think big in terms of like the numbers and the targets for the brand. But like, how do you, you know, I don't know. How do you maintain the premium luxury brand at the same time of being like, you know, growth focused?
Yeah, it's extremely hard. And I would say in between, we've come, of course, sometimes. And then I came back, you know, to the original direction, because I think what threw me off once was a couple of conversations with potential VCs, right? And VCs have very they're very spoiled with, I think, D2C brands in particular in the recent decade. And so they only look at those, from my experience, especially in Europe, to be fair. I think US is a little bit more visionary and a bit ahead of us in Europe. But it's very, you know, the growth numbers need to be there 100%. This is like the main thing. So you start to think, should I discount more? Should I, you know, push certain things further? But I have actually seen a brand and been running a brand before that was already in that place where people have been waiting for a 40% discount before even making a purchase, because the brand had educated people to wait, because they knew every week there's going to be some sort of communication that gives you a promotion. And that's just never a spot that you want to be in. I think you want to be in a place where people really appreciate your brand, also appreciate your modern luxury values. What is modern luxury, right? Like, is it just an unlimited amount of packaging and as it used to be? Or is modern luxury actually looking finally after the planet and the people and, you know, the recyclability? And not just the recyclability, but is it already recycled and how can we reduce our impact? So I think there's a lot more people, especially after the pandemic as well, that are looking for those more modern luxury values. And this is how we stay relevant. But it's not easy to stay on course, because it's if you compare to some other high growth brands, yeah, we're not giving out those 25% discount codes. You know, it's just not going to happen. We rarely ever discount. The time that you would get a promotion maybe would be around Christmas time as a bundle, you know, four products at the same time, and you get like a 15% saving, but only because we link it to a charity project in which we donate 15% of profit directly to the charity as well. So you just got to stick to your own rules, I think, and not listen to the ones that are only used to you know, fast growth D2C brands. I'm in a much happier place like this. And actually what I'm noticing also, a lot of the retailers come to us to stock us. You know, I don't even have a sales team. You know, they just get in touch with us through customer service, and if it's relevant.
Oh, wow. We'll
pick up on it. And so we have, even in the US, we're looking at, so we have been growing in the US quite a bit, and we haven't done any marketing except for a little bit of press. And we were voted best haircare brand launched in 2021 by W Magazine. We won Best in Black Beauty by Essence Magazine for some of our products. We won Women's Health Magazine. We won Wall Street Journal. So it's been mainly a bit of press and then word of mouth. And we have a lot of hair restoration clinics getting in touch with us and asking if they can be Monpure exclusive after they have tried the product. So we work through direct to consumer channels, of course, but we also work through clinics, aesthetics clinics, hair restoration clinics that see the same effects of the products that they have as we do on the direct to consumer channel.
And now a quick break for a word from our sponsor, Okendo. Okendo is the new standard in customer reviews for high growth Shopify brands. We use them with our clients, and they work with over 5,500 of the fastest growing Shopify retailers like Skims, Nomad, and Buck Mason to help them leverage their most powerful asset, their customers. Okendo gives brands all the tools they need to capture and showcase customer generated content like product reviews and ratings, photos and videos, and Q&A. Plus, they have an awesome integration with Klaviyo that makes it easy to do cool stuff like send review request emails and target shoppers based on review content. With super affordable monthly subscriptions, starting at $29 a month, it's really a no-brainer to me. Visit okendo.io to learn more today. That's okendo.io, Okendo. Thanks, Okendo, for sponsoring the show. Yeah, and that's really interesting. Like, how are these people reaching out? Like, they're trying the product for themselves, and then they're like, oh, we should carry this?
Yeah, either they get in touch and say, we are XYZ, we found your brand online, or we heard from your brand or from a friend, and it really helped her, and we would like to try the product. So, you know, most of the time, if I can find that company online and it's not a tiny, tiny business, and I know they're a serious company, I'd send out free samples for them to try for a few months, actually. And then if they're convinced and they stock it, they use it in specific treatments. So, for example, in the UK, we work with a leading aesthetics clinic called EF Medispa. And they have a hair growth treatment that they do, which is over the course of many, many weeks. And they have found that with our products, the results were a lot better than without, right? So, and that's because we help to maximize scalp and hair health during those, let's say they have blood plasma injections, you know, on the scalp, for example, PRP treatments. So now our brand is part of every single treatment, because they believe it has such a stronger result than without it. Right? And they recommend it to their customers that way as well. So it's my way of thinking, how do we stay relevant beyond just platform marketing, which we totally do and also need to compete in. But who else is doing our marketing if those platforms don't exist? And for me, that's the professionals. That's the doctors, that's the aestheticians, that's the people who do those treatments.
Yeah. And then, like, just in terms of that, you know, and these, like, I guess, quote unquote rules that you stick to for like being a premium brand, what are some of those? Like, are there any kind of like guiding principles? You're like, oh, we will do this, we won't work with these partners, that sort of thing.
To be honest, there's definitely partners that we say no to, I say partners, but we haven't accepted them. So it's, yeah, absolutely. I think, you got to be careful how your brand is being seen. It's very hard, obviously, to control your price point in the market, right? Because once you sell a product and somebody else owns it in stock, you cannot tell them what price to sell it. So I think we just want to make sure that we are partnered with companies that understand the value of the brand, that actually do a lot of education for us, and help their customers understanding how to maximize scalp and hair health better. If they have that sort of approach to marketing rather than just sending out discounts all the time, you know, and we see that the rest of their selection is very carefully curated, then we know we're in the right place. So that's definitely something we're looking at. But for us, it's always important to be able to educate the customer, because there's a massive gap in education when it comes to hair care. Skincare is very sophisticated already. People 15-step Korean skincare regimes. But in hair care, what have you been doing so far? Maybe shampoo, conditioner. If you're lucky from a treatment perspective, maybe a mask. But really, there's just such a gap in education of how, you know, the hair grows for 2 weeks under the scalp before you can even see it, and the things that you can do to keep your hair follicles activated, you know, and going through those key moments that I've raised before. So because of that highly educational directive, we only find partners that can reciprocate that.
Interesting. And then, like, how do you educate at, you know, at scale? Because I imagine that's really hard to do. You said you're selling in 37 countries. How do you think about that education as a brand?
Yeah, I say 37 countries, but, you know, we're still a tiny brand compared to some of our competitors out there. And I think it's also okay to recognize it. For us, the UK is definitely our biggest country, followed by the US. And then the rest is, like, we have, you know, very strong customer bases all over the other 35 countries. But you also got to remember we're doing everything in English. So even that language, you know, that language barrier is something that we need to address in the future if we wanted to expand a bit further. But we're definitely seeing a need in all the German-speaking countries for our products, which is great to see, and in the Middle East in particular as well, and actually also in Asia. So that's great. And it's picking up everywhere. How do you do it? So there is various ways. We have doctors on board with us ourselves. So I am not the face of the brand, and I don't want to be the face of the brand. I'm not the right person to tell women what's wrong with their scalp and hair health. Maybe I understand the science behind it, but you know, it's just there's a bit of a disconnect. I grew up with a single parent mother, so maybe I'm a bit more empathetic to these topics than, you know, other men traditionally are. But for me, it's the team of experts that's at the front of Monpure. So we have an in-house dermatologist, we have a medical doctor, we're bringing a psychologist, a trichologist on board now. And these are the people that really give and provide advice to the customers, but also educate our teams. And we have, you know, an extremely strong blog where people like to educate themselves on, and our email marketing is pretty major as well, purely because there's such a lack of education in the rest of hair care that people just somehow navigate to us. And then we utilize our team of experts to give the best advice of how to maximize scalp and hair health through those channels. And sometimes, you know, we do it through press. So we would do an event with our doctors that have helped us to develop the formulas as well. And they would explain what they do with their patients and how the products can help even over the counter rather than just prescription. And then there's other things. One thing that does really well for us is TV shopping, believe it or not. We're actually smashing all the targets on TV.
Oh, interesting.
To women that are 45 plus with fine hair. And the hair's, you know, the scalp is aging, follicles are shrinking, in particular during the menopause. And our products can help with that. So that seems to be a very powerful channel for us. And it's great because what we're seeing is that after maybe one show, the traffic to our site is massively increased, and it helps us to maximize our retargeting efforts afterwards.
Interesting. And this is like a commercial, or this is more like a long form advertorial piece?
No, it's actually commercial. It's actually commercial. So, you know, it's 5 minutes on something like QVC.
Nice.
And I have seen it with other brands before that I've been running and building globally. I think as long as you can control the sets that are being sold through those channels and then bring it back to your website, you're in a great place to utilize that. So alone as a small brand, you would never be able to invest so much money for so many people to see what your brand is and what we can do. So that's been really successful for us.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what does your, you know, we talked a little bit about like how you educate customers and like how you think about building a luxury brand. You know, we're starting to now get into like the actual channels and distribution you use to do that. What does that look like? Are you looking at like the typical D2C playbook? Like, let's, you know, go after TikTok, let's go after Facebook ads. Or are you thinking about these other channels too, like, you know, TV and things like that?
I consider it completely omni-channel. I think we totally have to play our role in D2C, and our job on our own website and our own ads is, and our own email marketing, etc., is to educate as much as we can. We don't need to compete on our own website necessarily with our customers, right? So we literally today we've launched on Cult Beauty, and I assume they will have some sort of introductory offer today. But I don't need to compete with this. I'm very happy for people to shop what they would conveniently be shopping. Right? That's totally fine for us. But if people need to understand the education element, then it comes either through our own website, through our customer care team, or through our doctors, or through all the clinics that we work with globally that educate for us. We're also, and I've briefly mentioned the synergy between luxury and science is something that I'm constantly looking at. I think in the future, you don't want to buy a brand that says Dr. something something on the front, which has black font on white background and makes you feel like you have a problem. So we're making it in a very luxurious, sustainable way, beautiful packaging, you're proud of it. And we still are scientifically based. And that's just the education behind it, but we don't need to look like we are a doctor necessarily. And so we are actually also sold in 5-star hotels around the world. So we have, in the Maldives, there's a 5-star resort that does 75-minute scalp and hair health rejuvenation treatments with Montpure London. So we can play in those luxury hotel channels. Again, very selective on who we would work with, as well as those luxury aesthetics clinics. So that works really beautifully together because all we do is balancing luxury and science.
Yeah. Like you said, like your product is available all over the world. How do you think about that in terms of growth strategy too? Because I think that's another more long-term play that the old D2C playbook, like that was more of an afterthought with what you're doing. We've talked before, it's like you're much more intentional about intentional about knowing where the big markets are for skin and hair care and really trying to build a global brand instead of just, that high growth, short stunt and sell style company. So how do you think about building a global brand?
And now a quick break for a word from our sponsor, Recharge. The subscription market is predicted to grow to nearly $500 billion by 2025. As a fast-growing area in commerce, subscriptions hold tremendous opportunities to build a community of customers who share your values. Recharge is the leading subscription management solution, helping e-commerce merchants of all sizes launch and scale subscription offerings. Recharge powers the growth of over 15,000 subscription merchants and their communities, turning one-time transactions into long-term customer relationships. Whether you're a direct-to-consumer business or an omnichannel brand, subscriptions strengthen your brand's relationship with your customers and make it easy for consumers to make repeat purchases. With subscriptions, merchants are able to experience predictable revenue, increase customer loyalty, and higher average order values. Turn transactions into relationships and experience seamless subscription commerce with Recharge. Get started today with the subscription payment solution trusted by over 50 million subscribers worldwide by heading over to rechargepayments.com/e-commerce leaders. And now back to the show.
Yeah, I think, the first issue we need to address, reiterating, we're still a small boutique brand compared to some of the other competitors, but is operationally we need to be set up better. So we're just opening a warehouse in mainland Europe, so we don't have those Brexit challenges anymore. In the US, we were invited to participate in a program called Luxury Stores at Amazon, and actually we're the best-selling hair care brand on luxury stores at Amazon in the US. And we haven't invested in any marketing except for a little bit of press. So we do that because we use their warehouses to then also allow prime delivery to our customers over there. But obviously in the future, we need to build up our operations in the US as well, and probably in Asia as well, and Middle East as well. That comes step by step. The other thing is also manufacturing. Right now, we are manufacturing everything with a leading manufacturer in Germany for natural ingredients. The idea is obviously to build that up in the US as well, as well as in other locations. So, reducing also our carbon footprint in for the long term when a country becomes big and relevant enough for Montpure. But I think it's always supported by a product first strategy. I think that's really important. Whatever you do, you got to create the best product possible. Doesn't matter how ugly your packaging is or how, you know, how expensive the product is or how cheap the product is. Nothing matters if the product doesn't work, right? Or what channels you're in. If the product works, the customers will come back to you automatically and look for it. If it helped people, they will come back to you. So I think there's still a lot to do on the product development side. We have a tiny range right now, very, very selected on scalp and hair health. But, you know, we have ventured out into accessories. For example, we have a beautiful jade comb, you know, which is not as harsh on the scalp as traditional combs because jade stone is very, very soft. It's a bit like a gua sha on the face, gua sha tool on the face. We have that for the scalp. We have beautiful double-layered silk scrunchies that help to prevent breakage for fine hair, which are selling extremely well. And I think it's just, there's so many categories you can build this out into, because once you create a brand and not just a short-term product play, people will buy into that lifestyle, that value side of the brand, more than just into specific products. So I think we have a long way to go. And I'm definitely also thinking of our own offline retail stores to really being able to showcase the best possible Monpure experience.
Oh, yeah. And let's talk about that. So you mean like Monpure branded retailers?
Yeah, Monpure brand, but not. I don't think I would open hundreds of them. I think only in key locations, so people can come in and experience the products and the formulas and the smell and the fragrance and feel and touch it before making a purchase or buying into a subscription model. For example, we haven't even started subscription yet, by the way.
Really?
We have a high retention rate as it stands, but subscription is definitely something we're looking into and makes total sense, because the reality is you cannot. So let's talk about prevention of hair shedding can happen as soon as 2 to 3 months, but hair growth can only happen as soon as 6 months or takes even longer. And you need to have like regular, you know, like it's a daily thing. So right. Subscription makes total sense. But we just didn't manage to build it just yet. So looking into it right now.
I mean, you know, so many brands are like, oh, how do we add subscription to a product that doesn't need subscription instead of like, you know, I think it also shows how good and effective your product is that you're selling it as a one-off product and then people are still buying it again and again. Yes. And again. You can always add subscription later. You can't just, you know, do the opposite.
I mean, we are actually, let me just pick it up because I'm going to read you something. Let me just open Slack. We are celebrating every single positive customer review. You know, we're so happy when we manage to help people with things. So I'm just going to read you something of some of the feedback that we get from customers, and just, I'm just going to read it out as it is. I have no idea if this one has something bad in it or not, but it looks like a positive one. But people are very open with us, and this is what it shows. This is someone called Julia, and she had sent us a message yesterday at 6 p.m. She says, I've been suffering from hair loss due to the Mirena coil for 5 years now. I've tried everything to try to get my lovely thick hair back, but nothing has worked. I even went to a trichologist who said that medication was my only option. I've been using the Monpure shampoo and conditioner for a long time, which I love, but I'd never tried the follicle boost serum. 6 months ago, I decided to give it a try. I hardly dare say this, but I think it's actually working. It's lovely to use, smells nice, doesn't make my hair greasy, and my hair feels softer, thicker, and has more weight to it. I have a long way to go, but this is the first time I actually feel like I've turned a corner. Thank you, Monpure. And it's just so powerful. When we hear something like this, the whole team's heart is like making a jump. You know, it's like jumping of joy. It's we are helping people with things that they didn't manage to solve, even through a medical system. And that's because hair loss, for example, has never been taken seriously by a medical system. So in the UK, we have the NHS. which is a government-backed health system, health insurance system. So it's all free, you know, to go to the GP and get a diagnosis, and your medical doctor will help you with that. And but again, hair loss is not covered by it, right? So what people do that have hair loss, they get really bad comments. We had some. We did a study with 500 women with hair loss, actually. By the way, 92% said that hair is a reflection of their identity, right? So it has a massive effect on your emotions. It's a massive emotional toll if you don't have hair. But, you know, women don't talk as much as men about it either. So doctors here have been just saying to people, you know, they've just been saying, well, there's nothing we can do. There's not enough research. And it is true. There's not enough research in that whole field. And so then you go private as someone that suffers from that. And you go find a trichologist, which is an expert for scalp and hair. Now, you can become a trichologist in a year online. You know, it's in some online universities. And you go, well, how medically backed is their suggestion? And so I feel like for us, it's also a responsibility as Montpure to work with the best trichologists in the world and actually be able to send our customers to them and speak to them and help them certify what's good out there and what's bad out there. But the fact that nobody found, or some of these women in particular, haven't found solutions to their concerns through a medical system and then try our product and it works, means that there's definitely a gap in research missing that hopefully we can help bridge one day.
Yeah, for sure. And I think going retail too with your own stores sounds really great also. How do you think about that? Like, how many SKUs do you have for the brand currently? And like, would you launch with your current number of products?
We have a tiny range, which is only 12 or 13 SKUs right now. We're launching a new product this year, but I'm definitely have plans to massively increase the range.
And would you go retail with like this current setup, which is like, what is it like, you know, outside of bundles, maybe like five main hero products?
Not in my own retail stores yet. No, I think that's maybe more like a year and a half away. Probably a year and a half away.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I was just wondering how you're thinking about that. And then in terms of like product, how do you think about that too? Because I, you know, that's another piece, right? To building a luxury brand, product is everything. How do you think about like expanding the product line as a up and coming luxury brand?
Yeah, I think, you know, for us, it's always what concerns are customers sharing with us through our customer service, and then identifying where's, you know, most interest in. But also working with those trichology, with clinics and aesthetics clinics and hair restoration clinics, they actually tell us what sort of products they require and how they would improve them so that we can create something that more of those clinics can use in the future as well and customers can use at home as well. So we're always going off what is the customer saying and what are the professionals saying before creating a product. And then usually, so we're the only brand that creates formulas that target not just the hair, but target the scalp and the hair follicle as well, right? So it has this triple layered approach. So this is how we're looking at when we create products, we tell those skincare ingredient stories for the scalp and the hair care ingredient stories for the hair. Right? And that's going to be something that we're going to do going forward as well. So for example, we are the only brand using retinol for hair loss. If I say retinol, most women will know what I mean because they're used to buying retinol for the face. It helps with cell turnover and anti-aging properties, but nobody has ever experimented with it in the hair loss field. So this is how we're looking at creating, you know, more product stories that are quite unique compared to what's in the market right now.
Yeah. And it's great to see like how you think about, because it is a unique perspective, right? You know, building and launching a luxury brand and product and, you know, it's not enough to also say, hey, we're a luxury premium product and slap a label on it. I like how you fuse science into the product too, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. I should have said every product we bring to market, we always test for a couple months on 100 men and women. And then we also do obviously all the vegan tests, all the cruelty-free tests, stability tests, microbiological tests. Even our microbiological testing is vegan, which is very rare because that's been done with cow enzymes before. And then we also do case studies for 6 to 12 months with our products of people that we, you know, that we're trying to help with their scalp and hair concerns. So everything is really like rigorous when it comes to creating a product. And then we have a third party that verifies every single claim that we have. And if something is wrong, we would not be able to launch it or register it either. So it's, we're behaving like a very, like a big company, but we're tiny, and we're doing it because we want to be here for the long term and not for the short term.
Yeah, definitely. And let's start to wrap with that. Like, how do you see, I know one thing, you know, you've mentioned before is like, you want to stand for something that's still relevant, like decades from now, you know, looking out of the future of the brand, like what is your vision for Monpure over the next, I guess we'll call it decades, plural.
That's a rare conversation to have. Yeah. Nowadays.
I mean, most people have no idea.
I think where we have started and the field that from my perspective, we have coined, and the gap that I saw during my time when I was managing director for this beauty conglomerate out of Manchester was scalp and hair health. And I feel like we will always be owning sort of the leaders or the world's first dedicated scalp and hair health brand. So it's never about just making things look better. It's always about strengthening. It's about the wellness of scalp and hair. And that's sort of, you know, our directive from day one. And I don't think that will ever change. I think when we look back in 10 years, we will still say, oh, Monpure, the world's first dedicated scalp and hair health brand. And how you improve scalp and hair health, that can obviously expand. That can expand through accessories, that can expand through new products that are maybe only just targeted at the hair as well, that will can also exist, you know, that can through collaboration, through treatments and spas. I think there's loads of ways, and we have a long way ahead of us. It's very hard to put to answer your question in detail.
There's so many years to think about that you've already planned out as a long-term focused brand.
Exactly.
No, but it's been great to catch up and to talk about, you know, a real different approach, which is like, you know, really hard to do. It's like, be patient, but it pays off. If you look at any great brand, right? They weren't built overnight, especially the ones that have lasted. Like you said, like they start, they own a category, and then they go and they grow from there. It's really cool to be able to watch you in this stage, still, you know, in the growth stage while building this brand. I'll have to have you on as it continues to grow. Where can we go to learn more and see Monpure London in action?
Yeah, sure. So on our website, monpure.com, or on our Instagram at monpurelondon. And hope to see some of you visiting us soon.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, Nate. Really excited to see what you put together. You know, it was really great to hear your perspective on building for the long term and, you know, focused on not building for next year, but building for the next decade, you know, the next generation of consumers. So thanks so much again for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Wavebreak Podcast. If you're not subscribed on iTunes or Spotify, go hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on future episodes. And if you're not on our email list, go sign up at wavebreak.co/join. You'll join other e-commerce leaders at brands like Skims, Cartier, and Walmart, and thousands more, learning exactly what's working in e-commerce right now. You won't want to miss it. Sign up at wavebreak.co/join. It's free. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Wavebreak Podcast. I hope you have a wonderful day.